From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Peter Damian. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump covers a wide-ranging list of topics during his remarks to a group of governors. He spoke about everything from the war in Ukraine to the economy. White House correspondent Owen Jensen joins us now in the studio. Owen.
Good evening, Tracy. Well, President Trump also addressed ongoing government cuts and what he described as fraudulent Social Security claims. But we begin with his comments about hot spots overseas.
I've had very good talks with Putin, and I've had not such good talks with Ukraine. They don't have any cards, but they play it tough.
President Donald Trump speaks about the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East.
And how about Hamas yesterday with the babies? How about that? You know, we're going to take that. We're going to continue to take that. I don't think so.
The president also pushes back on men and women's sports.
So you better comply because otherwise you're not getting any federal funding.
See you in court.
Every state. Good. I'll see you in court. I look forward to that. That should be a real easy one. And enjoy your life after governor, because I don't think you'll be in elected politics.
And the president faces blowback for government cuts. Press Secretary Caroline Levitt says Democrats promised spending cuts for decades, but President Trump is the first to get it done.
There should be no secret about the fact that this administration is committed to cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. The president campaigned on that promise. Americans elected him on that promise, and he's actually delivering on it.
The U.S. Postal Service could be next on the chopping block. The Washington Post says Trump could privatize it and fire members of the board that oversees it. A White House official denied the report. And at the Defense Department, they paused a plan to cut thousands of staff while the proposal gets reviewed.
There are concerns, though, at the IRS, where more than 6,000 workers were cut yesterday. Some IRS workers warn refund checks could be late this year.
The U.S. Senate passed a $340 billion budget framework after an all-night vote last night on Capitol Hill. One Republican says the money will be put to good use.
The man who murdered Lakin Riley was released from detention because we had no bed space. That should never happen again. $175 billion in this bill to make sure we got enough bed space, we finish the wall, and kick gang members and other criminals out of the country. $150 billion for military that's been worn out.
The budget passed along party lines prioritizes immigration and national security. One Democrat says that it is nothing more than a tax cut for billionaire friends of President Trump. There is outrage across Israel after Hamas sends back the bodies of four hostages, but one wasn't who they claimed it to be.
These Hamas monsters also cynically refused to bring back the boy's mother, Shiri, and sent the body of a Gazan woman instead, in brazen violation of the agreement. Today, the heavens shake. The entire civilized world should condemn these horrific murders.
And yesterday, Hamas returned the bodies of four hostages to Israel. One was 83-year-old Oded Lifshitz. Two others were 4-year-old Ariel and 9-month-old Kafir Bibas. The fourth was supposed to be the boy's mother, Shiri, as we heard, but forensic tests showed it was someone else. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu swore that nothing will stop him from bringing those responsible to justice. And joining us now for more is Julie Fishman Raymond, Managing Director of Policy and Political Affairs with the American Jewish Committee. Julie, thank you so much for coming on. First, your reaction to this news, and how do you think Israelis are feeling right now, especially the hostages' families?
Thank you, Tracy. It's impossible to imagine what the families are feeling at this moment when Israel and the entire Jewish world, and I think everyone who's been watching this horrific saga since October 7, 2023, is just gutted by this news. Every time Hamas does something else, we say, this has shown us who they are. This has shown us the extent of their barbarity, their lack of respect for the sanctity of human life. And even knowing that, even having gone on this horrific journey of over 500 days, the news that Shiri's body was not, in fact, Shiri was gut-wrenching and shocking to so many.
Oh, absolutely. Just cannot imagine, especially what the father, the husband is feeling right now. The ceasefire was really a fragile affair from the beginning. And now Netanyahu says sending back the wrong body, that violates the agreement. What do you think will happen next, Julie?
There is hope that this situation can be remedied. In fact, the ICRC, the Red Cross, currently has a body in hand that's been given to them by Hamas. And even when I say given, I'm reminded of sort of the cynicism of this situation, because it wasn't even given to them. Reportedly, Hamas said, oh, there's a body at this location, you go get it, like a sick scavenger hunt. But apparently the ICRC currently has this body, and it's being transferred to the Israelis, who can then go through the autopsy and the medical processes to determine whether or not it is Shiri. There's no question that Israel wants these negotiations, the phases, to continue to get all of the hostages back home. And it's simply a matter of how to negotiate with this monstrous entity.
Yeah, and six hostages, living hostages, are supposed to be released tomorrow. Do you think that will happen after all this?
I do believe that it will happen, and the families are eagerly awaiting the arrival of their loved ones. And in part, I think that will happen because the international response has been so, so strong to what happened with Shiri, and also even just the tragedy of seeing the bodies of Ariel and Kafir in their coffins, in their tiny coffins, displayed, paraded like war booty in front of cheering crowds, cheering crowds of even children who were brought to witness that horrific atrocity. But across the American administration, there's been nothing but outrage. Even the Secretary General of the United Nations condemned the parade that was on display with the coffins, and then also the change in Shiri's body for someone else's body. So the tremendous, tremendous pressure on Hamas, I think, will ensure that the bodies are released, or the living hostages will be released on Saturday, and hopefully that Shiri's body also will be returned.
Yeah, we're praying for all that. Julie, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, now to an update on Pope Francis. The Holy Father has been at Rome's Gemelli Hospital for a week now. And while he is showing slight improvement, his medical team announced today that the Holy Father is not out of danger and will remain at the hospital at least for another week. EWTN Vatican correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
Good evening, Tracy. Pope Francis is not out of danger yet, but is breathing independently and will remain in hospital for at least another week. That is the latest headline from the Gemelli Hospital here in Rome this evening. The Pope's doctors held a press conference inside the foyer of the hospital at 5:30 p.m. Rome time, where they said that the Pope was doing fine, but due to the persistence of pneumonia in both lungs and taking into account the Holy Father's age of 88, they said that he was not out of danger yet, but was open to other possibilities. The press conference lasted around 40 minutes, where Dr. Carbone and Dr. Alafari said that when the Pope was initially brought to hospital from the Vatican, he had an infection and was fatigued. They stated that after a series of tests identifying microorganisms, viruses and bacteria, they confirmed that the respiratory tract infection had developed into pneumonia. The doctors added that the Pope suffers from a chronic disease, and while it can be curbed, stressing again because of his age, they do not have an easy job. Now, when the doctors were asked about where the Pope's health could go from here, they said that there was a possibility that germs could enter his bloodstream and affect his organs, which would be a very dire situation. But they stressed again that this has not happened. When asked about the Pope's mood, they said that he was in good spirits, was not bedridden, and he was up and about. The doctor actually joked that when he enters the room in the morning, he says, "Good morning, Holy Father," and the Pope responds, "Good morning, Holy Son." And also the doctors added as well that the Pope had asked them to tell people to remind them he's an old man with a chronic disease. Now, one journalist asked if the Pope would be returning to Santa Marta. That's the residence where he lives inside Vatican City. And the doctor said that it was their strong desire that he would be returning, but he would have to continue his treatment there. Finally, they said that he was simply a good patient, but a fragile one. That is the latest from the Gemelli Hospital in Rome. Colm Flynn for for EWTN News Nightly.
Now to Germany, where voters are headed to the polls this weekend. At stake, who will run the European Union's most populated country for the next 4 years? Millions of voters say they remain undecided. A mainstream conservative bloc is in the lead with 30% support. The right-wing alternative for Germany is next at 20%. And set for a possible breakthrough, the main topics are immigration and an economy that has stalled. After more, we turn now to Martin Rothweiler, Managing Director and Program Director for EWTN Deutsch. Martin, great to have you back on. Good to see you. We understand that these elections are being held 7 months earlier than anticipated. Can you remind us again why they moved?
Yes, the early federal election this coming Sunday on February 23 became necessary after the ruling coalition of the Social Democrats, the Green Party and the Free Democrats collapsed on November 6, 2024. As a result, Chancellor Scholz called a vote of confidence at the Bundestag on December 16 last year, which he lost as expected. The main reasons for the collapse of this coalition and the resulting new elections were internal differences over financial policy and how to deal with the debt brake. While the Social Democrats and the Greens argued for relaxation in order to stimulate the economy, the Free Democrats insisted on strict budgetary discipline. Differences with regard to immigration issues and security concerns played also a role.
Yeah, you mentioned immigration, Martin, and the economy is another issue. What are some of the other main issues on the minds of voters?
Migration and economy, as I said, are the two most important issues, according to opinion polls. People also are very concerned about the war in the Ukraine, so peace and security is another main topic. Social justice issues, the climate and pension provision are other topics of relevance. With regard to the voters who are faithful Catholics, the questions of the ideological indoctrination following the gender ideology, as it is present, for example, in the self-determination bill, which allowed to change your gender once a year, questions concerning the protection of life are also naturally key.
Martin, what about church leaders? What are they saying, if anything, heading into this election?
The Catholic Church and the Protestant Church launched a joint appeal for the election. They are stressing the importance of democracy, saying, quote, "We maintain the extremism and above all ethnic nationalism are not compatible with Christianity. We therefore appeal to all eligible voters, please vote for parties that stand up for our democracy." End of quote. Their appeal is mentioning peace, freedom and prosperity, the need to take care of natural resources, the care for the poor, the right of life and immigration policy that must remain committed to humanitarian refugee policy and good integration of immigrants. Moreover, the appeal is putting emphasis on the social market economy, whose theory is basically the food of the social doctrine of the Catholic Church. In the past, I must put emphasis on that, the Catholic Church refrained from making statements about specific parties. This time, though, the Catholic bishops have published a declaration that ethnic nationalism and Christianity are incompatible, mentioning explicitly the AfD, the Alternative for Germany. There's a whole discussion going on whether being a protagonist of the AfD and being an employee in the church or active in the parish is compatible. There are Catholics, though, who will be voting for the AfD because of their clear resistance against the gender ideology, for example. There are extremists in that party. Most of the voters are not and should not be branded that way. Some Catholic bishops do not agree with recommending concrete parties to be voted for and not to be voted for. According to the Bishop of Eichstätt, Gregor Hanke, the church does not have the task of dictating to the faithful which parties they should vote for, but must intervene in the process of opinion forming.
Well, Martin, thank you for coming on and sharing all this with us. We really appreciate your insights. God bless.
You're welcome.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a day in court, new developments in the killing late last year of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, plus analysis of the Trump administration's new move against Mexican cartels. New developments in the case of the CEO of UnitedHealthcare who was fatally shot in New York City in December. Today, Luigi Mangione made his first court appearance since his arraignment. Lawyers were expected to determine pretrial paperwork deadlines and possibly even a date for the trial to start. The 26-year-old has pleaded not guilty to multiple counts of murder following the December 4th killing of Brian Thompson outside of a Manhattan hotel. Meantime, a report says that UnitedHealthcare is being investigated. The Wall Street Journal says that the Department of Justice is looking into how the company records diagnoses that lead to extra payments for programs, mostly for people over the age of 65. President Trump has formally designated several Latin American cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, including two of Mexico's top drug trafficking organizations, the Sinaloa Cartel and the Jalisco New Generation. In response, Mexico's president, Claudia Sheinbaum, said the new designation in part, quote, cannot be an opportunity for the U.S. to invade our sovereignty. And here to talk to us more about this and what it may mean for the church in Mexico is Jason Poblet, president of the Global Liberty Alliance. Jason, always good to see you, my friend. So what do you think of this designation? Do you think it was a good move by the Trump administration?
Thank you, Tracy, as always. And yes, I do think it was a much needed move, bringing our policy into the 21st century. Last time I was on your show, I remember we were talking on this topic. We were chatting about how several bishops in Mexico had reportedly been involved in trying to mediate and de-escalate some of the cartel violence. And I said then and I say now, it's always good to keep the church out of these things. It can be an important interlocutor in certain respects. But from the U.S. standpoint, this is something long coming. And I was very glad to see it because it's ultimately putting our policy in the right posture. I understand where the president of Mexico is coming from, but ultimately they have failed to secure Mexico. And right now, just today, one of the leaders of one of these transnational terrorist organizations from federal prison in New York, up in the United States, threatened the Mexican president, saying, if you don't get me out of here, Mexico is going to collapse. And those are his words, because they're flexing. These people do not operate like a criminal cartel. They operate like transnational terrorist organizations.
Yeah, and Jason, let's talk about that. I mean, it was almost exactly a year ago that we talked about the bishops that were trying to come to this sort of peace agreement with the cartels. For folks who maybe didn't see that, may not know about this, tell us a little bit more the threat that the cartels pose to the church.
I mean, ultimately, the church is in a really difficult situation. I mean, most Americans that follow news or global politics know about Hamas, they know about Hezbollah, these Middle Eastern terrorist groups. But these organizations pretty much, and some experts may disagree with me on this, control Mexico in many sections. You cannot do business in Mexico. You cannot do certain things in Mexico, such as at the very grassroots, operate a family store in some of these regions of the country, because these criminal organizations control them. And that's what's so important about what this designation has done, is that it's going to help Americans and U.S. financial institutions and others give us more tools to combat some of this and help Mexico. For the church, of course, this puts them in a more precarious situation. I think the Church of Mexico cannot afford to be taking sides because they don't have guns, right? The state ultimately is the one that will be called in to support attacks on the church. So they have to straddle a very, very fine line. So this is a challenging time for the Mexican for Mexican Catholics, but ultimately, America and Mexico need to stand together, work to eradicate these cartels. These people are impacting us here with fentanyl, with human smuggling, and with legitimate businesses. There's a big supply chain, global supply chain issue here that they have managed to penetrate almost every single state along the U.S.-Mexico border, down the eastern seaboard, all the way up to New York and Maine and beyond. So this is going to be a complex process. It's going to take a long time. And for Catholics in Mexico, especially the bishops who are in the middle of some of this, they could be helpful in helping de-escalate some of this, but ultimately this is up to civil authorities to resolve.
Yeah, and I think we all agree something has to be done about this. Jason, thank you so much for coming on and for your insights. As always, we appreciate it. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you for having us. God bless you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a new book out tells you how to get along with almost anyone. We speak to EWTN's Dr. Ray Guarendi about what we can do to make our lives a little more easygoing. Book from EWTN's own Dr. Ray Guarendi examines ways that we can repair and strengthen our relationships and how to get along with almost everybody. Dr. Ray provides strategies and common sense suggestions to navigate difficult or even discarded friendships. It also includes three so-called conversation killers, tips on how better to give and receive criticism, as well as advice on communicating with people we may find difficult. And the author of How to Get Along with Almost Everybody joins us now, Dr. Ray Guarendi. He is a Catholic psychologist, author, and a speaker. He is also the host of The Doctor Is In on EWTN Radio. Dr. Ray, always so good to see you. All right, we're going to talk about your new book now, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Tell us why you picked this title and why write this book now.
You got to put almost in there, Tracy. You can't get along with everybody, especially if they don't want to get along with you. That's a promise you can't keep if you have a title like Get Along with Everybody. The book basically focuses on changing others by changing yourself. Most common question, Tracy, that I get as a shrink is this. Will you tell me how to change somebody else? I tell them I have a hard enough time changing you. So the book really focuses on getting along with people through taking a good hard look at yourself and saying, okay, what can I do, one, either to smooth out some of the friction in this relationship, or two, be more at peace because they're so difficult.
Yeah. Give us an example of that. I mean, there's a lot of good advice in this book, but, you know, how can we, if we're dealing with someone who we find difficult, what should we do?
Watch your language. In the very first chapter, I talk about some words that are terribly overused. One of them is narcissist. Oh, she's a narcissist. Oh, my spouse is a narcissist. My mother-in-law is a narcissist. My friend is a narcissist. Narcissism is a serious personality disorder. We fling that word around. And what it does, Tracy, it makes it sound like these people are not reachable. The second thing is you got to give up the demand, and it is a demand, Tracy, that people be different than they are. I'll give you a small example. Your mother-in-law has made 8 years of snarky comments on your motherhood. You know they're coming. Total would be 464 at last count. But yet we're still upsetting ourselves over her comments. When will we get to the point where we say, okay, I'm no longer surprised by what she does. That's what she's been doing. That's probably what she will be doing. All right, then I have to recognize that is the reality. Rather than getting upset every single time, start to recognize, what do I expect?
I love that. And we all have stuff, and we have to keep that in mind for sure. Now, you advise us to really be more easygoing. Tell us a little bit more about that and what you think that looks like.
Easygoing means, and I say this for us Christians, we should be among the most easygoing of people. We should. My father-in-law, he wants the front seat every time we go somewhere. I don't like the back seat. Okay, Dad, you can have the front seat. My wife wants to go watch some movie about orphan puppies that are saved by a grizzly bear. I want to go watch Terminator 26. Okay, what would be the easygoing thing to do? Let's go watch that movie. Every day, there are literally dozens of decisions we can make that make us easier to get along with.
Yeah.
What would you like to do? Tell me about it. No, that's okay with me. What would you like? If we can do that, people look at us as Christians and would say, I don't really need any food from him. I don't need any clothes from him. But you know what? He's got a nice personality. And that's what we can give most people, Tracy, is our personalities.
That's so true. And that's such good advice. And what do you hope that people get from reading your book? I mean, I got a lot from you just talking about your book right now. But really, what would you like folks to glean from this?
Tracy, I don't want to throw you a curveball here. But did you see on the back where your picture was under the almost everybody? Did you see it? I told him to take it off. I really did. I said, she's a nice person. So, what do I want them to get? Here's the thing. You can't change everybody in your life, but you can be more at peace around difficult people. You can do this, and there's a lot of ways to do that. I talk about it in the book.
Well, Dr. A, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about your book and for all the laughs. We really appreciate it, and congratulations on the book. God bless.
Tracy, always a pleasure.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.